Welcome to Industry Misinterpretations, episode 129, with James Robertson and Michael Lucas Smith. This week we have John McIntosh here to talk about his VM work in the Squeak world and his port of Squeak to the iPhone. If you have feedback on this or any other episode of Industry Misinterpretations, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can also head on over to iTunes and leave a comment for us. We would really appreciate it if you did that. You can head on over to Podcast Alley, cast a vote for the podcast. And of course, you can interact with us in the Industry Misinterpretations group at Facebook and the Small Talkers group at Ning. James Robertson, Syncom Small Talk Product Evangelist. I'm here with Michael Lucas Smith, our lead on the Web Velocity project.
Good morning.
And he answered much more promptly than he did the last time we did this.
Except that it was anachronistic because people could be listening in the afternoon or evening.
It's always something. All right, yeah. I've got John McIntosh here, who's been working on enough things that I don't really want to sketch out a bio. I'll let John introduce himself.
Okay. Well, that's kind of hard to get a handle on because I do have my fingers in many things. I guess I've been doing small talk here now for coming on 14 years, actually. I actually got started with Ralph Johnson's Small Talk Summer School in Urbana a long time ago. And since then, I've had the opportunity to work with the Squeak Central folks when Squeak was pushed out the door from Apple and then when it was at Disney. And in the summer of 2000, I took over the responsibility of building the Macintosh virtual machines for the Squeak community. I think, interestingly, that has been quite a journey because, as you all know, Apple had changed hardware platforms and changed operating systems. And even if you look at 10.4, there was like 11 versions, and we have nearly 7 versions of 10.5. And each time the version changes, there's always some little issue or testing or something that Apple's changed. So it's been... there's been a lot of versions of the Mac VM over the years because of all of that. The other things that I've done are also, actually, which I didn't mention before, was in the area of garbage collection. 12 years back, Ward Cunningham just kind of casually mentioned to me that garbage collection would be an interesting area to look into, and it turned out it was. So occasionally I get involved with very large clients who have very large issues with how the standard Visual Works collector works and what it's doing to them. Usually at the point I get involved, it's throttling them. But some of the lessons learned there, we took over to the Squeak VM, where we have... collect some statistics now and have a little better handle on the tuning. I guess on the VM side, there's myself who does the Macintosh work, Ian Pomarda who does the Unix, Andreas Rabb who does the Windows. Tim Rowledge used to be with us, but he's really stepped back from working in the small talk arena at the moment. And David Lewis has been... taking over the role of librarian and also doing the 64-bit work. And of course, as maybe some of the listeners know, Elliot has been working on a JET for Squeak. And lately we just added the closure and his aliens work or Newspeak stuff to the VM. So there's quite a number of changes going on there. On top of all that, I've been working. I just came off a 4-year project, which was Sophie, which was a project by Bob Stein. Bob is one of these visionaries who feels he can just go tell the staff to paint the sky purple. And, you know, your next question is how many cans of paint does that need? Mm-hmm. He received significant funding from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation to build the next generation of publishing software. So myself and Stephen Riggs, Tim Rowledge, and Michael Ruger, and a bunch of people from Ampara, and Rick Smoody at the start, we went off on a four-year journey and attempted to build this massive Squeak-based publishing system, which then supported Subalia pixel typography and the ability to import any type of media and save it in multiple different formats. So it was quite one of these scope creep is probably an understatement. And then unfortunately someone came along and said, you know, oh yeah, we could do this in Java in a year. And I think your listeners have heard this story before, so
I don't quite understand. Right, this was your thing. So how does somebody basically decide, no, we're going to do it in Java now in a year, which they can't do, when you've already got a working system?
The politics of it were actually discussed on /dot and. Because someone who will remain unnamed raised the question about your question, actually. And so there was discussion, and then actually the oversight was from the University of Southern California. So they actually, one of the directors there responded to the question. You know, and it came back to the other people are bigger and Java's a more mainstream language and so forth. You know, the issue of whether or not that it will happen is besides
the point. Then maybe we should rewrite Emacs in Java as well. You know, it's, you know, if something's there and it's working, why do you recreate it? And if you recreate everything because something, a language is more popular, then how does a language ever become popular? And, you know.
So I think this fall we'll see what happens when their first delivery date comes up and where they go.
Yeah, I actually just wrote about that topic on my blog. I think what these things often boil down to is that you get a new project manager or a new manager somewhere in the chain who's decided that I don't understand technology X, which is what you happen to be using, but technology Y is my bestest, favoritest thing ever. And then he decides that technology Y should be what's being used. I mean, I've seen people come in and advocate for Power Builder 10 years after Power Builder was, you know, basically passé on those grounds. I don't think it really has much to do with technology, has more to do with comfort zones.
Yes, but speaking of technology, the other interesting thing that I've been working on is that the European Smalltalk User Group people paid some money last summer for me to rebuild the Squeak VM on the iPhone. And so I did that, and I'm in the middle of a project where I'm trying to build a seaside-based wiki on the phone. And that's coming along. The iPhone technology software is actually only just about a year old now. It has lots of interesting bugs and features, which is driving me quite crazy at times. And when you're the world expert in this particular field of mixing Smalltalk and Objective-C in an application, sometimes that's not helpful because you actually don't have anyone to turn to kind of figure out why it doesn't work.
Well, let me delve into that a bit. We talked a little bit about this in an email because I'm running your wiki server on my iPhone right now, as it turns out. I've got it sitting here in front of me. And you had to do some surgery on the Squeak VM to get this to run. I guess you needed to create bindings in Objective-C in order to work on that platform, because I've had people periodically ask me whether or not it would be feasible to run Smalltalk and, you know, in particular VisualWorks, I guess, on the iPhone. And while that's not something I'm going to address today, you've actually taken Squeak and ported it over to the iPhone. So what really was involved in that?
Well, one thing I did was you actually had to sit down and figure out what the API was to talk to the VM. As some of your listeners might know, the virtual machine in Squeak is all built in Smalltalk. And so at some point, we use VMmaker to take the Smalltalk code and extrude that as basic C code. That basically gives you the virtual machine, but the virtual machine then has no interface to the operating system for doing display, sound, user interaction, keyboard, mouse input, file, socket, all of those type of things. So when you sit down and actually have to build a virtual machine for a new platform, you need all these that support infrastructure. So one of the tasks I did, which is on the iSqueak site, is document what all the external API was. So I basically went through I think there's less than 100 methods now that you have to provide a support for, and went through and documented what they were and what the expectations were, plus also looked at the Unix, Mac, and Windows behavior and identified any bugs and behavioral issues. So taking that information, then it was just a matter of writing the Objective-C support to provide all of that.
What about the extra stuff that you can do on the iPhone with the accelerometer, et cetera?
Oh, well, the next trick was I needed a bridge to Objective-C, and so there was actually two or three other bridges that had been done in the past. Actually, Evie Brandt of Seaside fame had done a Seaside bridge, and then there was two other ones that were done. Sorry, an Objective-C bridge. I didn't have an FFI interface because that requires having to write some ARM assembler, which I haven't done. So I basically created a plugin, and then I went through the particular needs of how the bridge works and fleshed out those callbacks.
Now, by plugin here, you mean one of the Squeak VM plugins?
Yeah, Squeak VM plugin, because you should be able to use it on Mac OS X and on the iPhone. For example, then, to get to the accelerometer, the accelerometer, you have to make some Objective-C calls to set it up, and then you get events back. And so the events come back through a proxy mechanism that I've been working on, which, again, Avi had started. But there was a number of alterations that had to be done since his work was more, a starter kit than... Once you really got into serious type of development, then you realize there was various shortcomings. So what can happen then is the accelerometer data just flows up from the virtual machine as an event, either on the VM event queue or via this proxy, which the proxy then actually turns the event, or I should say the Objective-C message send, into a Smalltalk message send. And then you handle it, and then you say what the return value is, and then it's given back to the proxy mechanism, which then returns to the original Objective-C caller. So you need all of that mechanism because the accelerometer is kind of boring. The most important part is the user interface from Apple's perspective. When you're submitting something to the Apple Store, what the application does, of course, is a criteria, but a much more important criteria is whether or not the user interface follows all their guidelines and behaves like all other applications.
Well, that's pretty tricky for Squeak, yeah.
Yeah, so in fact...
Well, you kind of get around that by presenting a browser interface, so you look like Safari for all intents and purposes.
Oh, yes, and then you have to behave like Safari, except that the browser interface that Apple provides doesn't behave like Safari, so you have to...
Well, no, you could do an OpenGL ES application just saying, no, it's a game, it just draws graphics.
Yes. So the trick is that you really are running a headless virtual machine in some respects, and then you basically interact using the Objective-C UI views and all the Objective-C widgets and stuff like that.
And so, you couldn't just pop Safari up because of the fact that the iPhone doesn't allow background applications. So if you were to put Safari up to front your application, your application wouldn't be there when Safari got up, right?
No, because they don't allow you to run background applications.
That's what I was getting at. So they still don't allow that in the new OS that they were talking about, I guess it was yesterday. Background applications are still verboten.
I don't quite understand. I mean, I understand why we'd want the Smalltalk VM running on the iPhone. That's pretty cool. But I don't understand why you would run a wiki server on your iPhone.
Well, it's content it's really a content management system. So what it lets you do is, of course, build a website on your phone.
But you've got three different ways to connect to the internet on this phone already. Actually, four now with iPhone 3. Five, in fact. Five different ways to connect to the internet. So I still don't quite get why you would want to run a web server or, you know, a CMS on your phone.
Well, there's cases actually where if you had a wiki, which is this that you've built, using the Seaside Peer technology, it's quite possible then to move it from your server over to the phone. And then you could then work with it on the phone in a location where you don't have internet access, such as like most air flights in America, various places in
back up a second. That's not quite true. You would have to run the server on your iPhone, then you would need another iPhone to edit the content.
Because
I don't know that you'd be able to do this on a plane with the way the regulations work, but I when I ran his wiki server, I was able to browse it from my MacBook. I mean, it's just, you know, it's
right,
on my land.
But you got a MacBook there. Your MacBook can run the wiki, right?
Well, it's a matter of sharing, because not only can you share to the MacBook, you can share to other mobile devices that have a browser. It was originally an idea to say, well, what if you wanted to share like all the photographs on your phone to other people? So how do you do that? And so
isn't that built into the iPhone and other phones with MMS already?
Well, the MMS stuff is actually a new offering on the phone as of yesterday. So applications,
and that's not real sharing anyway, isn't that just that's messaging? That's not exactly sharing.
I think the other thing not to forget here is that since it is a seaside environment that you're running, there's an opportunity for you to do other more interesting things.
Right, that was I was going to kind of drive at, is regardless of whether you like the idea of running a wiki on the iPhone, the mere fact that you put a Smalltalk VM on the iPhone means that someone could go out and start writing Smalltalk applications of really any sort for the iPhone at this point using this technology, right?
Yes, and that gets back to wanting to be able to lever the power of doing stuff in Smalltalk versus in Objective-C. I'm not sure how that will pan out. I guess we'll see what happens. But let me just clarify. The other thing there is that you can actually interact with the wiki on the phone itself. So if you were to build a wiki-based information system, you could then just host it on the phone. I think the other thing to remember is that this is actually a personal content management system for hosting. People who are in the industry understand how easy it is perhaps to like set up and host a wiki that other people can get at. But for a lot of people, that's tough to do. So actually having it in your pocket is a pretty cool thing, because there's no one else involved in the ability to host it.
Yeah, I mean that's fair enough. But I my personal opinion is I don't see that great a benefit to doing this until you can control the GUI and all the sensors on the iPhone from Squeak as easily as you can in Objective-C.
Well, actually, that leads to a question: how much of this can you do with the Squeak VM that you put on the iPhone?
how much can you control of the graphic capabilities on the iPhone from the Smalltalk environment? I mean, not from the application you've got here. I mean, obviously it's a wiki, so you're not really exposing any of it from that functionality. But if somebody wanted to start from scratch, what's possible right now?
You can do the majority of the Objective-C calls. There are probably ones that don't work because there are limitations in the bridge, of course, which would need to be fixed. We don't have the FFI interface. So if you're using, you're interacting with non-Objective-C operating system stuff, you can't really do that. But we, at some point, hope to work around that issue.
Now, what do you mean by that? Because I'm not familiar with the iPhone environment really at all, other than the brief snippets I've read here and there. When you say non-Objective-C OS stuff, what does that mean?
Well, if you wanted to use the OpenGL stuff, for example, that the calls for doing the OpenGL are not Objective-C calls. They're operating mm-hmm. system calls. And so you would use an FFI interface to do that. The other interesting thing that comes into play here is that you end up with a mixture of Objective-C and Smalltalk, because you actually have to build the virtual machine in Xcode in order to deploy it on the phone. And so just because that's part of the process, it kind of makes it easy for some of the functionality to be written in Objective-C versus in Smalltalk. You know, as an example, when you set up a view, you may pull the view from disk, and then there's some post-processing to do. It's easier sometimes to do that in the Objective-C side versus doing it in Smalltalk. Because the point you get to it in Smalltalk, the view may have already been displayed, and so you get some setup takedown visual artifacts, but you can avoid all that if you do it over on the Objective-C side. How much you split your work between the Objective-C and the Smalltalk side, I think people have to figure out based on their objectives and their work habits. I'm back to the issue of it, that this is all kind of very new, a very new platform and programming style. And I don't think we've worked out at this point how, you know, what the best practices are.
Is Apple ever going to approve a Squeak-based application for the iPhone, given that it's a flexible virtual machine?
I think the answer to that is that a lot of the game manufacturers, if you go look and you wonder about the 6502 V virtual machine emulator they're running on the iPhone so that they could port all their games from...
6502? Are you serious? Really?
Well, if you look, some of them, you know, they resurrected games from... you know, the 1990s from, you know, handheld devices.
Wow.
And they did that in a week. It's not as if someone sat down and, you know, took this massive C program, which it was probably not. It was, you know...
Probably assembler, actually.
Yeah, 6502A assembler for the Apple II and for various handheld devices. You know, but out of that, I guess I will be the first test case, since I'm the proverbial 5 days away from shipping. And Apple does not say that you cannot host a virtual machine. What they say is that you're not allowed to download bytecodes from the internet.
Huh, why?
Because
then you're running unapproved code, right?
Yeah, so you can download bytecodes as long as it's run by an approved virtual machine.
What if you download source code instead?
Well, I think bytecodes here is really shorthand for source code. That's kind of interesting, because I had looked at Scratch, for example, and We ran right into the issue of it that people build Scratch projects and send them off to the MIT server. And so technically, downloading a Scratch project and running it on the phone would be a violation of the contractual obligations. Hmm. Because you are downloading a high-level language description of a program and then executing it on a non-approved.
So is this ultimately what blocks things like the Flash stuff, is because of that restriction? Is that what's blocking Flash from the iPhone from that at one level?
I actually don't know. There was actually an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday that talked about that Flash is actually not offered on any smart mobile device.
Aha, I didn't know that.
Yes, they pointed out, gee, it's not on the iPhone, it's not on the Google Android, it's not on RIM, it's not on Microsoft mobile devices. And that this is becoming a serious problem for Adobe, their inability to get it on any device. And, you know, you have Microsoft with, I think, their Silverlight product, I guess. And so it'll be interesting to see who's going to fill that particular void. You know, I don't really know from Apple's perspective, of course, why they don't want Flash. You have issues with size and CPU usage and battery life and security, and the cellular providers have issues with bandwidth and so forth. So I think it's all of the above.
They have had security issues in the past as well, and they are legit. And they, it's a proprietary format, so maybe that's... And the other thing, I guess, is that all this research and effort that's going into making JavaScript faster sort of obviates the need for Flash and even Silverlight, for that matter, because you don't have to have any proprietary technology to make an interactive, good-looking website anymore. I wonder if that's the goal, to basically get, the fast shitting JavaScript engine onto the iPhone at some point?
Maybe. I mean, some of those projects, of course, driven by Google, are open source, so you're not having to deal with licensing and royalty payments to some software vendor. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and then you've got something that will work universally across all these mobile devices, just plain web page CSS and JavaScript. You can't really argue with that.
No.
Let me switch gears for a minute and go back to some of the VM work you've done over time and the VM work you've been doing for the Mac version of Squeak. You touched briefly on the fact that there's stuff happening there with Elliot's Cog work and some of the other things going on. What's the state of Squeak VMs and JITs at this point? I know that there have been multiple attempts at doing a JIT for Squeak in the past, and that looks like it's more real now. What's the state of play there at the moment, and how does that how does what's going on Elliot's end affect what you do with VMs for the Mac for Squeak?
Well, on my side, because I went back and documented how the VM works, is that I wanted to take the iPhone VM, which is actually a subclass of a base VM, and then subclass that and build a new OS X VM for Apple's upcoming 10.6 operating system. A lot of the base functionality in the Mac VM is based on technology from 1984, and Apple has basically said all of that interface is going away. And then there is this whole premise that the VMs want to migrate from 32 to 64-bit. And so in order for the stuff that I'm working on to work is that I have to push out a completely rewritten version for the 64-bit platform. Now, that really doesn't cover the work that Elliot is doing. Elliot has been working for Quack and has been being funded to build a JIT for Squeak, and hopefully sometime this year, in theory, he will have push out a JIT-based Squeak VM. So the Squeak community, of course, is patiently waiting for that to happen. And, you know, it all comes down to when he feels comfortable and, you know, all the licensing issues and so forth are addressed, that it'll get out the door. The other work that's been going on is the Hydra work that Igor has been working on, which is the whole concept of running multiple virtual machines and then doing using a message passing queue to move Smalltalk code from between the virtual machines to basically allow you to distribute work in an address space across for multiple virtual machines, which then takes advantage of multi-CPU machines, which most people now have.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tip of the iceberg there, and it's like sort of the bare minimum. We kind of did the same thing with an experiment we called polycephaly, which means multi-head, multiple heads.
Yes.
It's the minimum thing that can possibly work, and it does work. And then anybody who wants to get more sophisticated than that can get tricky about how they manage multiple VMs and where they put their queue and how they distribute the objects and all that kind of stuff is not something that the little framework has to dictate, which I like.
Yeah, some other things, because actually I talked with Elliot the other day, you know, going to 64-bit means we have to relook at the Squeak's memory space. We need to solve issues if you have 500 million objects in your database. You know, the existing algorithms won't, I should say 500,000 million objects in your OOP space, you know, the existing algorithms won't really let you deal with that. So there's a lot of, I think, fundamental work that can go on when we transition from 32 to 64 to address people who run really big or want to run really big images.
Really, really big images.
I had another question that's kind of sort of along these lines. There's the Squeak board just got elected, and how does the Squeak board interact with this kind of VM work that's going on amongst the people that you've discussed?
Well, I think one of the election platform planks was that there needed to be more leadership from the Squeak leadership board. So that was raised as an issue, and some people campaigned on that in terms of really setting more concrete objectives and then actually attempting to get them implemented. They have not actually, you know, I haven't seen any actually action on that because it's only been a week or so, but it's going to be interesting to see how that works. I think the what's happened in the Squeak community, which people may be not cognizant of, but is that there's been a fair amount of it's not fair to call it fracturing, but it's really people have been forking. We did that for Sophie. We basically forked off our own code base for the VM and for the image and so forth. But you also then have the Pharaoh stuff, what Quack is doing, Seaside and other special interest groups, I guess you call them, you know, which has basically taken image and the VM technology and been busy building their own flavors of the Squeak environment.
So then is it fair to say that one of the things the board kind of has in front of it is to try to reunify whatever needs to be reunified?
I think so. I'm not sure, you know, you're ever going to get things unified. I think the issue is that if the various groups are working on technology which they want to offer back to the community, then there has to be a process in place so that bugs that people find in one branch then ultimately end up in everyone's branches. And so I think that's the hurdle that you're running into right now.
Are we really going to see like a plethora of Squeak VMs in reality? I just don't see us having.
From the virtual machine perspective, I think that's unlikely because the number of people who actually build virtual machines is for community use is probably you can count them on one hand. It's more from the image side is where the issue is. Because you can take an image and then, you know, go to Monticello and then just add stuff. And then your group can add stuff and make changes and so forth. And then you push that out as a product offering. And so if you take a look at, there must be four or five or a dozen different variations of the Squeak image that you mm-hmm. can download and run. And they, you know, at least half of them look very different and feel very different than the other half.
Oh, yeah. When I downloaded the Seaside one-click experience image just to see what that looked like, it didn't look at all like, I mean, it looked mostly from just an eye candy standpoint, it looked pretty much like any other Squeak image, but a lot of the menus were different and the arrangement was different. It kind of felt different than most other Squeak images I had looked at.
Yes. And so I think that's what, you know, you're seeing from the fragmentation viewpoint.
That's a good thing, right? Eventually the horrible base Squeak experience will disappear, surely.
Yeah, we actually haven't even talked about, you know, all the eToy stuff. I mean, eToys is becoming a huge platform on the
OLPC.
The XOLPC. And they're wanting to reintegrate back into the eToy mainstream. Also, you technically also have the Scratch people who, you know, went off and actually John Maloney there took a very old Squeak image and then rebuilt a whole new morphic environment in it.
Well, this of course Pharaoh says, as well, right?
And then there's Pharaoh, which has a lot of interest, I think, at the moment because they're attempting to build an image which is kind of has a much more of a business focus to it. So, I mean, you can really categorize these as what the special interest is. I mean, for the Seaside, for example, it's more about being able to do build Seaside applications and debug and deploy Seaside applications. So it's not about the user interface. It's more about the tools.
What about Craig's variant, Spoon?
Actually, I spent a day or so with Craig a couple of weeks back because I was very interested in looking at his work for the iPhone, actually, because the iPhone is a very memory-limited device, and the issue you get into is to take an image and you have to find, if we could just get rid of like 10 megs of stuff that I don't need. So you spend 2 or 3 weeks actually doing that by hand. But really what Craig has been working on is the ability to start up a virtual machine and then basically page in the objects that the virtual machine uses from a master image.
And but that so would definitely be against Apple's, you know, thing, right? Because that would be streaming code in for sure.
Well, basically, he calls it imprinting. And so if you have a test suite that covers all the functionality test of your application, you should be able to run it against nothing, and then at the end you end up with basically all the code that is a requirement to run your application. Craig runs that as a coupled app, you know, like a binary pair. But, you know, if you're doing deployment, you could just deploy the imprinted image. And then if there's something like if you forgot to actually run one of the methods, you'll get an oops fault, but you would end up translating that into, you know, it's a does not understand kind of thing. I mean, it is an error, but it's that class of does not understand errors. So, you know, so in my talking to him, it says, oh, now I'm back to, oh, yeah, I need to have like 100% code coverage on my application. Yes, and I'm sure people know how difficult that is.
Yeah.
To achieve.
Well, one of the ironic things about things like the iPhone and other small mobile devices is just about the time that I thought I was going to be able to stop worrying about small memory footprints, you know, and putting out 10, 15, 20 megabyte images wasn't going to scare anybody. Now I've got that problem back again.
Yes.
just when I thought it was safe to get back in the pool.
Well, I've had lots of interesting times with my iPhone and understanding how the memory works on it. It is, you know, people forget that it is a Unix computer, and so they ask questions, and you kind of have to say, you should go read a Unix fundamentals book on operating systems to understand the behavior of your phone from when you ask questions about how does memory work on the device. So it's not as if Apple is doing something new and unique and special rules. So, you know, the phone has, they talk about 8 gig or 16 gigabyte phones, and you think, well, that's great, I got all this memory. But in reality, the most important part is that there's only 128 megs of RAM.
Right, that's what I was getting at, is you can think of the other stuff as disk. And it's
disk space, right. Yes. Now, there's some special things here that there's no paging of pages to disk, so that's an issue. You can't page out.
Which means you won't running Gemstone on the iPhone anytime soon.
Well, yeah, because Gemstone is, you know... Are you giving them ideas, James?
No, I'm just saying that without paging, you're going to have an awfully small database.
No, because Gemstone, you know, backs to disk, right?
Yeah, I'm just saying that with 100...
It's just not, they're not going to be able to do anything, because the 128 megs, well, that's for the operating system. So then there's 22 megs for the graphics engine. And so then you're down to 102 megs. And then Apple actually has a restriction where they say that your application can use no more than 64 megs of pages, which includes, of course, the supporting ARM code. So in reality, I've worked it out to that you can have an image that's about... 54 megs in size is where you hit the boundary.
Then I'll put it in terms I understand it. No bottom feeder on the iPhone anytime soon.
Is bottom feeder bigger? I thought it was a small application.
It should be a small application, but it's not.
There's a small application inside of it that wants to get out.
Yeah. How many megs is it?
Well, the base image is, when it starts up, is something like it consumes 30-some-odd megs of memory. And then when you start loading feeds in, it basically caches everything in memory. So you start tracking a lot of feeds, it consumes a lot.
Oh, I see. Yeah, people don't work on devices which have only 54 megs of oops space, because they say, oh, I'll just grab 5 megs of, you know, space to stream in the socket or something like that. So those kind of bad behavior things you can't do on the iPhone.
Right, it's kind of a back to the future kind of thing.
Yes. I guess we'll have to see what happens in the future if Apple makes a device that's less restrictive. But Tim Rowley's told me the issues, you know, are with doing that is that the RAM requires electrical energy. So if you provide more RAM on the device, you end up decreasing the battery life.
Right, and not to mention that if you add enough, it heats up and nobody really wants their pants to catch on fire.
Well, there's always that.
Yeah.
So Although I think the lithium batteries that you get, the generic one's supposed to do that chore for you.
I think on that note, we can put that aside. So thanks for coming on the podcast, John. It's been a pleasure.
Sure. Thanks, it was good talking to you both.
Thank you very much, John.
Yep, thanks.
Okay. Bye.
In this next segment, I have Dave Buck with this week's Cimbaron Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbaron Design Minute. There's a coding technique I've used several times, which I've really come to like. I call it an active specification. The idea is that you write a specification for a file format or perhaps a test procedure by putting it into a method. The method delegates all messages to a helper instance variable. This allows the method to focus on the specification itself and not worry about what's being done about it. For example, a method to describe a file format could send a message for each field. One message may indicate the name, length, and type of the field. Now, by setting the helper variable to a file reader, you can run the method and have it read from a file using that format. If you set the variable to a writer, it can write to a file using that format. If the variable is set to a reporter, then running the method will write a report on the format. Since the specification method only describes the specification itself, different helpers can do different operations with that specification. This has been the Cimbaron Design Minute. Cimbaron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbaron.com or email info@cimbaron.com.
Up next is Randall Schwartz with a quick look around the Squeak world with Squeak News.
This is Randall Schwartz here with your latest Squeak News. You can find all this news and more at news.squeak.org. Andreas Broadbeck has posted on the Seaside mailing list that he has had a great experience using Seaside running on Gemstone in his business. And in order to give something back to the Seaside community, he's released a new deployment tool that he's developed for his own use. The tool, called Seashell, is a shell-based deployment tool for Seaside applications running on Gemstone. The goals of Seashell are: handle multiple concurrent Gemstone Seaside applications, each with its own stone, running on the same server machine. Easy to add tasks for your individual environment and project. Easy to run tasks from the shell. And fast execution. Based on Andreas' own requirements, the tool currently works with Gemstone as a Seaside server, Lite DeepTBD as the front-end server and load balancer, everything running on Ubuntu 8.04.1. Andreas says on his blog post about Seashell that it's, quote, "It's far from complete or rock solid, but I want to share it as early as possible. There's plenty of room to add more tasks for other tools and environments, of course. And I plan to add more features as soon as I need them. Contributions welcome, of course." For Squeak Weekly News, this is Randall Schwartz. You can also check out my blog at methodsandmessages.vox.com.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please tell other people about it. We'd love to have more Smalltalkers and more developers learning about Smalltalk through the Industry Misinterpretations podcast. If you have feedback, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. Head on over to Facebook, join the Industry Misinterpretations group. Head on over to Ning and join the Smalltalkers group. Or head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for the podcast. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.